See where the most successful unemployed coach right now is being tied to Tallahassee. So Florida State tries to figure out what they're going to do with Willie Taggart. I'll just give you a body of evidence. Some decision-making in the Wake Forest game this past weekend. But Urban Meyer is being attached to Florida State, and people wondering if he would take that job. Maybe that's a good question to ask. Mitch Light from Athlon Sports. Good morning, Mitch. How are you?
I'm good, Gary. Hope you're doing well.
You know, everything is attached to Urban Meyer when it's USC, but there may be some, I don't know, some intriguing jobs open up. Do you think there'd be any interest on Urban Meyer's part for a place like Florida State in a conference where there's just one behemoth in Clemson?
You know, this is just me. Obviously, no insight on the situation other than just following it from afar. I cannot see that. And you never know how certain coaches attached they are to their legacy. Some guys don't care. They just want to coach and win. Some guys care. And if Urban Meyer cares about his legacy at Florida, which his tenure did not end well, I can't see him going there, you know, going to the arch rival of that school. So I think there's – if he's serious about getting back in, I think there's other – really good opportunities other than Florida State. I mean, I would rule out, I guess, Florida State and Michigan would be the two schools that would be, you know, his the two schools he's coached at, their arch rivals.
If Florida State makes a move, don't they almost have to make a move to the person that can beat Clemson, that can walk in the door and you already feel good that in a short amount of time they're going to be where Clemson is at?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one way of looking at it. I would argue, though, that Florida State is a good enough job where, you know, you just have to worry about Florida State. I know that sounds like coach speak and all that stuff, but I think the right guy at Florida State will have them in the top 10 and competing with Clemson. I don't know if you know, we've seen in the SEC, and it's kind of worked, I guess, with Kirby Smart, but all these schools trying to hire Nick Saban guys to beat Nick Saban, when you just need to go out and hire the right guy for your school. And right now it doesn't look like Willie Taggart is that guy, you know, but how many of them are there? That's the difficult part. There's just not many sure things in the coaching world. I'd call Urban Meyer one of those sure things. I think Nick Saban's one of those sure things. I thought Jim Harbaugh was a sure thing when Michigan hired him. So it's as much as all these schools have going for them, Gary, you can't just hire someone and just assume you're going to be elite.
All right, so let's stick with that, and we'll swing our way to the Big Ten, but let's stay in the state of Florida. Miami lost their fourth game of the year this past weekend. Georgia Tech was 1-5, and they were a big favorite, about 18.5-point favorite. They also lost to Virginia Tech when they were 2 touchdown favorites. Manny Diaz finally has used the word rebuild this past weekend. What's gone wrong, in your opinion, at Miami this year?
You know, they're not very good offensively. Their defense has been good as expected. Their current homestand, they've been really bad on offense, except for that Virginia Tech game, which was a weird game. They fell behind. You know, they only scored 17 points against Central Michigan, 17 points against Virginia when that was a struggle, and then 21 in an overtime game against Georgia Tech. I don't think they have the quarterback situation close to figured out. You know, Jaren Williams did some pretty good things early this year, but he's been replaced by Nicosi Perry, who's now hurt. And they just have not gotten the quarterback position right. And, you know, I can't remember the last time. You know, they've felt good at that position. And when you don't have the right quarterback, you have to be so good elsewhere, and they're not so good elsewhere. They have a few nice parts. You know, Jeff Thomas is a nice receiver. I think he was suspended last week. I wasn't in love with the Manny Diaz hire. That being said, there weren't a lot of guys out there that you just chalk up and say, yeah, that guy's perfect for Miami. If you're looking for a fit, it was Manny Diaz, but he's a guy with no experience. So I'm surprised they're this mediocre to bad, but I didn't really have high hopes for him this year. Did not, you know, we picked Virginia to win the Coastal, kind of like Virginia Tech more. Yeah. Didn't see this coming from Pitt, but it's been a surprise.
Hey, and you're in Nashville, what's been the fallout from Tennessee's outing at Alabama, but in particular Jeremy Pruitt and his sideline demeanor with his quarterback?
It's split. I think you've got half the people who say you should never touch that kid's face mask. You know, it's a new era and all that. Then you have other people saying, well, he barely grabbed it, showed some restraint. You know, it's no big deal. So it hasn't been dominating the conversation as much as you would think. I think it's been as big of almost a national story as a local story. My personal opinion is shouldn't have done it. No big deal. I think the bigger issue for Jeremy Pruitt is his overall sideline demeanor. I think he's too almost emotional on the sideline. He coaches like a fan sometimes. If you, I don't know if you're watching the BYU game earlier in this year, they had the cornerback get beat deep. He's just berating that kid, Alante Taylor, on the sideline in the heat of the battle when he needs to be coaching his team. That's for a position coach to do. That's for Jeremy Pruitt to do in the meetings next week. So I think he needs to kind of learn how to be more of a CEO on the sideline. And I guess what he did on Saturday, you know, he showed his emotion too much on Saturday.
Tua's ankle, what does that do to the SEC race?
Makes it a lot more interesting, I'll tell you that. Yeah, I with a healthy Tua, I was maybe leaning towards picking LSU in that game anyway. Obviously, we got a few, you know, Alabama plays Arkansas, and both teams should be undefeated for that game. But yeah, I just really like what I've seen of LSU. We'll find out. We'll see Mac Jones in action against Arkansas this week. I don't know how much we can, you know, glean from that. He will have a full week as QB1, prepare and all that. But from what you saw without Tua, I think LSU might even be the favorite going into Tuscaloosa, which would really be wild. So I think it's a huge injury, and that type of injury, I mean, how can we sit here and say, even if he does play, that he's going to be 100%? And, you know, not that he's a big-time runner, but that's definitely his mobility is a part of his game.
Mitch Light from Athlon Sports joining us. Mitch, here in Nebraska, Scott Frost is pretty close to the vest on injuries, and especially now where injuries are happening to marquee players, he doesn't give you much information. Wasn't it kind of refreshing to hear Nick Saban be pretty open right away about what Tua's injury was and the timeline?
Yes, it definitely was. And there was another coach last week where I heard the same thing. And he's just like, you know, we hope to get him back in 2 weeks. If not, we'll get him back in 3 weeks. It was, and you wouldn't expect that from Nick Saban. You would expect more of the no information. But he, you know, they came out with a Monday release about the specific procedure he went through, when they hope to get him back. I saw someone on Twitter complaining to a local writer here that everyone's covering Tua's injury, but no one's talking about Tennessee's quarterback situation. And someone replied, well, first of all, you know, different teams. But someone's like, well, you know what? Alabama came out with a press release with a statement from their head coach on Sunday. Tennessee doesn't say anything about injuries, and they haven't all year. So, you know, what are you supposed to say? Speculate on a kid's concussion there? So that's just an example of two programs handling things completely differently.
Hey, two of the wildest stats of the weekend. One, Trevor Lawrence in 21 career games, all victories, has never taken a snap in the second half when Clemson is trailing. The other one is Illinois upset Wisconsin and never had a snap in the red zone. How do you explain what happened in Champaign?
That's a great stat, and, you know, it shows some big plays, I guess. You know, I think Corbin had a long run there. That was stunning, you know, just everything we've seen from Wisconsin. You could argue one of the most dominant teams in the country. You know, the resume wasn't the quality of opponents weren't great, but they had four shutouts in six games. You just don't see that in college football anymore. So I was very surprised. You know, Illinois had done some decent things this year. They made Nebraska sweat, obviously, in that game there. They're getting better. But Wisconsin, kind of a mature team with so much to play for. I don't know if it was a look-ahead situation, but I think we're going to look back, and that'll go down as one of the most surprising results of the season.
Hey, I know when you're year five and you're Jim Harbaugh and you're Michigan, you got no moral victories. But any positive takeaway from Michigan's performance at Penn State?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, they fall down, 21-0 was it, or whatever. You know, they kept battling back, and they were in a situation where they basically had the game tied if Bell makes that catch there. So I think that's a positive going into Penn State like that. If it wasn't Jim Harbaugh, the lightning rod, and we all talk about him, I don't think we'd be that alarmed by the state of the Michigan program. You know, they've done some good things. Maybe they haven't lived up to expectations certain years, but because it's Jim Harbaugh and because everyone talks about him, every game is just micromanaged. And they got a huge game this week against Notre Dame. And, you know, if they lose that game, more talk. But talk about the quarterback position. I talked about it at Miami. Michigan hasn't really had the quarterback position solved since Jim Harbaugh's been there. I guess that 1 year Jake Rudock was pretty good, the year he transferred from Iowa. But other than that, it always seems like they're wanting just a little bit more from the quarterback at Michigan.
Hey, in a year of college football where, man, we like what SMU's doing, Baylor, Wake Forest, there's Minnesota, teams that have had a nice schedule and they've taken advantage of it. Minnesota, and we talked about the Gophers before, could have started 0-4. Instead, they're unbeaten. They play Maryland. They got a chance to be unbeaten with Penn State on November 9th. They're going to go over their win total. They're big favorites again this weekend. They rolled at Rutgers, where everybody does. But they did. They didn't have any letdown after beating Nebraska. What's your thoughts on Minnesota going into November if they get past this weekend?
Yeah, it's going to be fun against Penn State because they have good skill. You necessarily wouldn't think of that. The quarterback, Morgan, has been very, very good this year, very efficient. You know, maybe Zach Enigstad's injury was, you don't want to say it like this, but a good thing because those two guys shared the position last year. Tyler Johnson's an outstanding wide receiver, and they've got a whole slew of running backs. So you don't think skill when you think Minnesota, but they are very good. And you mentioned at the top, they avoided disaster early in the year, beating South Dakota State by 7, Fresno State by 3, Georgia Southern by 3. A great stat, they were losing at the 6-minute mark in all three of those games, wow. And they won all three. And basically since then, they've played a lot better. They have not played close games in league play. Now, I'm looking at the schedule at Purdue, Illinois, Nebraska, at Rutgers. Not exactly a murderer's row there, but they've won those games convincingly. So we'll find out more. Expect them to beat Maryland this week, and then the Penn State game will be, the biggest game in Minnesota since I've been following college football.
I would agree. What did you learn about Mario Cristobal this past weekend?
What a win for them. You know, I've been on the Oregon bandwagon because if you look at their defense, they've been one of the best in the country since that game against Auburn, and they probably outplayed Auburn in that game. I was really looking forward to an Oregon-Utah clash in the Pac-12 championship game, and I was working Saturday early, so I didn't see much of that game. I was following the score, so I was glad to see Oregon win because I think they're the better team. But for them to go up to Washington and win that type of game, I think that's just another step in that program because what's been the talk about Cristobal, he can do a lot of things. The big things well, he hadn't done the little things well to win tight games. Well, the entire team did the little things well to win that game.
Yeah, and you know what? Oregon, Utah, if they stay on that same path, that's a pretty good championship game.
It is, and, you know, I would say that the winner of that game would be in position to earn a spot in the college football playoff, depending on what else happens. I think the committee is, you know, they can look at that Auburn game and say, yeah, they lost that, but they probably outplayed Auburn. Utah, no crime in going, you know, losing to Friday night game at USC. And actually, right now, USC is in the driver's seat. They control their own destiny. They're game up, or they're tied with Utah in the loss column, but they beat Utah. So, the Pac-12 is shaping up to have a really nice title game.
Any chance LSU, Ohio State, or Notre Dame trip up this weekend?
I don't see it in the Ohio State game. In fact, I thought the Ohio State-Wisconsin spread of 14 was a little low, just based on how dominant Ohio State's been. Sure, Michigan-Notre Dame, I would say it's a toss-up. I think the spread's 1 point there. LSU is, I'm drawing a blank. Who's LSU playing this week?
Auburn.
Yeah, that spread was about 10. I don't see it. To me, LSU is just so good on offense. They're so difficult to defend. It's going to be a great matchup, obviously, with Auburn's defensive front there. If I was going to pick one of those, if I was picking between Ohio State or LSU to trip up, I'd probably pick LSU.
Great stuff as always, Mitch. Appreciate it. And I always look forward to your podcast with you and Braden Gall up on Athlon Sports. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Gary.
That's Mitch Light from Athlon Sports. You can follow Mitch on Twitter at Athlon. Mitch, going back to a question I asked Mitch at the beginning of our interview, there were some rumblings yesterday. Willie Taggart is 8-11. In-game activity for Willie Taggart is not so good. And so Florida State may have to make the decision after 2 years, are they going to move on? And I imagine that a big-name booster, floated Urban Meyer's name. And again, he's most successful unemployed coach that is out there. His name is attached to every single job in America. On the column of looking at why Urban Meyer would look at Florida State, one, he has familiarity with the state. He is well known across the country, but in that state. Now, Tallahassee compared to Gainesville is, I think, different. Geographical location, the kind of town that you are in. Tallahassee is the state capital. Gainesville is more of a college town, but you would be in the ACC where there's just basically one team right now, and that is Clemson. I mean, look at the ACC, and essentially it is a mess when you're talking about the top tier of college football. The facilities have improved at Tallahassee. Now, they kind of took for granted that Bobby Bowden just was able to recruit on his own and get all these players, and that they didn't need an indoor facility. They've improved their facilities in Tallahassee. People aren't going to the games. It might be more of a, okay, some places when you have a coach that is not 500 and he's in year two and you understand it's a rebuild, we'll give him another year. But when you're at Doak Campbell Stadium on Saturdays and that place is half empty, longtime followers of Florida State football don't recall that happening. And the Jimbo Fisher National Championship gets further away, and you've got to find a coach that can overcome Clemson. I'm sure they would throw a boatload of money at Urban Meyer, but Urban Meyer would be more comfortable at a place like Gainesville than Tallahassee, in my opinion. He's more comfortable at a place like Columbus than Tallahassee. Just the kind of area and the kind of city that they are in that you have to recruit to, that your university is in and you spend all your time in. I keep going back to a conversation we had last week. The more I watch him on Saturdays on the Fox show, he's really comfortable and he's really good at what he's doing right now. Whether it be on that show breaking down football or the bits and pieces that he's doing on the Big Ten Network with Jerry DiNardo, where he is breaking down teams in the Big Ten on offense and defense. And he's talking to you like a coach, but he's delivering it like a broadcaster. And that's not easy to pull off when you haven't had a lot of experience in that profession like Urban Meyer has. I think he likes what he's doing. Tough to get away from the coaching itch. And then will he scratch it in the offseason when whoever the new leader at USC picks up the phone and says, hey, you want to stay in Los Angeles? I don't know. I think TV is pretty good to him because he wakes up on Sunday and he doesn't have to worry about a loss. He's unbeaten every time he wakes up on Sunday. All right. A little bit later on, we will dive into the USA Today came out with their yearly salaries for college football. They do this with college football and college basketball, and it's an interesting read through. Scott Frost's salary of $5 million is 14th in the country. He is 5th in the Big Ten. The guy that will be on the opposite sideline on Saturday is the lowest paid coach in the Big Ten, and Tom Allen. He makes $1.8 million. Paul Chryst is 9th in the Big Ten. But there are 10 college football coaches that make $6.1 million or more. 10 coaches that make $6.1 million or more. The average salary of the FBS coaches from the public universities, private universities don't have to disclose what they pay their coaches, it is up. There has to be a ceiling because these new TV contracts that are going to be up for renewal or up for bidding, there's no way they're getting the same amount of money that they got the previous time, just because the landscape has changed. Will there ever be a stopping point of coaches' salaries escalating like it is now? There has to come a ceiling, but does anybody want to admit that out loud? Or even go there and realize how we might have a limit here? No, because you see the results of winning, what it does to the attention, the branding, and it does to your university as a whole. All right, 11:23, Gary Sharp Show. In about an hour, we will talk with the, I just did his dance, George, Andy Kennedy from KETV, Tom Chattel as well on this NBA Tuesday, where parity in the NBA, this might be the most parity, George, we've had in the association since the mid-2000s. Yes, yes. Who you got in the West? Who you got in the East? George and I will get into a furious debate. It's a black and white show. Those seem to go over well on television. We'll do it on the radio. On 1620 The Zone. Hanging out, drinking in the back of the-